Life is about constant evolution. Always better today than we were yesterday.
Welcome to The Only Easy Day Was Yesterday, the official Navy SEAL podcast. I'm your host, Scott Williams, and today we have with us the Command Master Chief of Naval Special Warfare Center, one Joaquin Martinez, a SWCC, and that stands for Special Warfare Combat Crewman. And welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you guys having me here. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it's an honor because he was in our very first episode. So we're doing a little bit of a reprise role. Back then, you were not the CMC. But that was 2018, right? April 2018, I think we did our first episode, and he was here to tell us a little bit about SWCC. And that's kind of something we want to talk about today. Today's topic is my experience as a Navy SWCC. A lot of people still don't know what SWCC is, and so we want to talk about that today. But first, let's start back in the beginning. How did you come into the Navy? What did you do in the Navy before you became a SWCC? So let's just start back in the very beginning.
Now, I came in the Navy in 1992. Prior to me coming in here, I was actually working at a pizza place. I was a young father, believe it or not, very young, and we decided to come in to the Navy. I had a cousin that was already in. He was an OT. There's most people probably don't recognize what that rating is because it's long gone. He was an OT, Ocean System Systems Technician, and he kind of inspired me to come in. So I decided to join. Initially, I was only on a two-year program. The two-year program they were offering at the time was apprenticeship programs, seamen, airmen, and firemen. So I came in for 2 years. And
where was your recruiter?
In Upland, California. So I'm from Ontario, California, and it's the next city over, so Upland, Upland, California. I went to Chaffee High School, and I graduated from there in, like I said, 92. But I had joined the delayed entry program at the beginning of the year, went to the delayed entry program, was in it for about 7 months prior to me coming in September of 92. So actually, next week marks my 31st year in the Navy.
Wow.
So I've been in for quite a bit. But really, that's what inspired me, my cousin coming in, and the fact that I was already a dad and I needed to do something. When I came in for 2 years, I got to the end of the year mark, and I was up for what we consider E4, or third class petty officer, and I had to make a decision. Am I ready to get out at 2 years with a wife and a kid, or do I stay in a little longer? And I made E4 and decided to reenlist for 2 years. I think after that, I was command advanced, what we call meritoriously advanced program now. I was command advanced at my three-year mark to E5, or second class petty officer. And at that point, I just felt like I had to stay in. It was kind of like no turning back at that point.
Yeah, I remember you had told us about the first time you had seen SWCC guys in action. Can you tell us about that again?
Yeah, hearing about SWCC first was, we had a chief, Chief Othad was his name. He was on board the USS Nimitz. He had previously done a tour at SBU-12. He used to talk to us about it all the time on how they would, you know, insert or deliver SEALs off the boats, and they would do different things. So he already kind of planted that seed. And it was probably about 95, 96 time frame. We were actually in Port San Diego. I was on the USS Nimitz at the time. And we were on force protection duty that day, and I was a lifeboat coxswain. Back then, it was a motor whale boat. I was a coxswain for a motor whale boat. And for those of you that are a little bit older, motor whale boats were, they are about 26 foot long, and they basically went about 7 knots max speed, which is not very fast at all.
Oh, boy.
This particular boat had no reverse on it because it was broken and hadn't been fixed yet. Well, the force protection drill was the fact that we were going to have some harassment from some SBU guys back then, now SBT, and they came over and they essentially came to the ship, and I had a guy hunkered down with an M14, you know, blank fire, of course, which we absolutely did nothing with that. These guys came in with their cool high-speed boats. They started doing some blank fire with M60s at the time, 50 cals, and completely obliterating us. And all I could do was just drive forward in a forward motion around the ship, just pretending we were guarding something. But I think once I saw that, I was like, wow, that's really what I want to do. I was also
and they were doing better than seven knots, I imagine.
I think in reverse they did better than seven knots, just looking at them and the way they can make their jet wash fly up, and just, you know, it was just really cool to see. And especially when they head out of there, I mean, it was just a blink of an eye, they were there, and then they just were getting out of there, probably making about 40 knots on the way out.
Like those power boats you see in the races, right?
Exactly, yeah. So it was very, very inspiring to see that. And I think that further planted a seed. But I didn't bite off on it until I decided what I was going to do with my military career to begin with. So I think after I got off the Nimitz, I convinced my wife to come down to San Diego on some shore duty after that, which I kind of got closer to the goal. And once I was on shore duty, I actually started training and put in a package to actually go to the program. And went to the program in 2000. And yeah, that's then. And I actually went back to, when I got first orders, I went, not back, but I went to Special Boat Team 12. It was my first assignment.
Wow. Let's take a little bit more of a intimate look at the community itself. You've been a boat guy now for how many years?
23
years. Mm-hmm. Risen up through the ranks. You've been through everything. First, tell me about the deployments. Because we always get this question from the people who follow us out there. What do you guys do out there? And what's it like, you know? Are you always on your boats? And is it coastal? Is it river? What is it? So tell us, kind of give us an overview of what you might do out there on an operation.
Yeah. First off, we have three boat teams. The three boat teams, one located here in San Diego, our West Coast, co-located with the West Coast SEAL teams. We have one on the East Coast, co-located with the East Coast SEAL teams, and one down south at SPT 22, which is located in Stennis, Mississippi. They are really assigned to the riverine, such that they're focused on wherever they're required. That could be different AORs or areas of operation. We, on the West Coast, now are really primarily focused on Pacific, Central Command. And then you have the East Coast, I'd say, you know, European Command, Southern Command area of operations where they generally farm out to. You know, the first deployment I went on, I think I can highlight experience. I think I'm going to highlight it because today we're actually getting back to where we were back then. I think the global war on terrorism changed a few things. I think NSW, Naval Special Warfare, really went to a full-on land, I'd say, campaign. SWCS never did. SWCS usually stayed maritime where we're at. We're talking in the Philippines. We're talking anywhere there was water, we kind of stayed down there, while SEALs mainly went to a lot of land deployments. So for my first deployment, I was actually deployed on an ARC Bravo, which is out of Okinawa. I was deployed to Okinawa. So it was a detachment, and that was about seven guys at the time. I was in a rib detachment, and we no longer have ribs except at the training command. And we were deployed there. September 11th happened. We were co-located with a SEAL platoon. And after September 11th happened, we got embarked on the ARG. It was the USS Germantown at the time. Which was an awesome experience to be able to integrate with a fleet and a few other folks and, you know, meet people and kind of just share that mission. You know, we floated around the Pacific for about a month and a half with him as a contingent out there. So didn't really necessarily go anywhere at that time. It wasn't until the following deployment we went to CENTCOM, when everything kicked off with, you know, the Iraq piece. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is that, you know, we were there co-located on White Beach. We were on land, boat stage there, aside from being embarked on a ship. Anytime we had to go somewhere, we loaded our boats. We fly for the most part. Or like I just mentioned, now with the Navy, we can actually embark on them and then take us to wherever we need to go. I think there's a little bit of everything. There's a little bit of ship life that you may encounter. There's a little bit of, you know, living on land in a forward operating base or some type of base that is temporary or with a host nation being other forces from, you know, different countries. It just depends on where your deployment's taking you and what the mission is at the time.
So you could be operating out of like a foreign naval base or a foreign port.
Absolutely. Or
you could be operating off of, you know, one of the amphibs. Mm-hmm. As part of a detachment with them. When you're doing these operations and you're away from that particular base, is it mostly coastal type operations?
I'd say generally it's mostly coastal. Now, again, we do have a boat team that's dedicated to staying close to the rivers, tied to the rivers. Mm-hmm. And I think that mission's important. And in working with a lot of foreign forces, that's their main thing. But I'd say coastal, I mean, if you look at the world, you know, I think it's most of it's covered with water. And so it's safe to say that there's a lot of area to cover for SWCC to cover. Actually, more than we have capacity for, to be quite frank. So yeah, lots of coastal.
Now we know that SWCC drive around in these fast boats, and they've got some nice big guns on them. Pretty cool stuff. And we've always heard that they deliver special operations forces or extract them as necessary. But there's more to it than that, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in today's age as well, SWCCs have become more independent on mission sets that they're doing themselves. So it's not necessarily just about delivering other soft forces. It's really about completing missions using just a detachment and a couple augments, if you will, consider bolting on to the detachment to kind of help accomplish missions. So there's not a whole lot of integration at times. When it comes to what SWCCs are doing, we're doing a lot of independent operations now, which is huge. I think if you look back from when I first came in, I don't think you would ever see that, right? It was always unified. And what I mean by that is you always had a SEAL platoon mainly and a detachment working together.
Yeah.
Now, we are still working towards that all the time. We are training all the time together, and we are making sure that we're never going to lose what we bring as a full package together. It's important that we always maintain those ties. But general, I think because of the mission sets nowadays, I think that we're looking more towards unilateral missions with SWCCs at this time. And simultaneously, you know, other forces, you know, to include our team guy brothers, I mean, they're doing their portion, their piece of the puzzle as well. They're unilateral mission sets, and we're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
But we always train to come back together.
So the deployments are about the same length as a regular Navy deployment, you know, 6+ months?
Yes, 6+ months. I'd say that's about average. I think depending on where you go, you may find yourself in an exchange, a joint combined exchange training event somewhere overseas. And what that means is you're actually just flying or going off to a particular location working with a foreign force, mm-hmm. as an example. There's different smaller deployments or TADs, temporary assigned duties, as we call them, that you might find yourself. But for the most part, 6 months is a normal deployment cycle.
So you mentioned earlier that you came into the Navy, you were already a father. So you've brought up a family in the Navy life, and they've had a chance to experience for quite a while now the NSW community. Tell us a little bit about that, what that family support picture looks like.
You know, that's actually an important piece to me right now. My family, my daughter been with me the whole time. I consider her, you know, the first dependent I actually had, because I wasn't married till actually I attended boot camp. So she's the longest serving, and by the way, she's still a dependent. She's married to a service member too now. So she's actually serving, her husband's serving overseas, and they just got stationed out there a while back. So they're now experiencing overseas life for them. So I'm real happy to see my daughter has embraced, you know, and it's not about just the Navy culture. What I love about my kids and what I love about what sometimes this community does, it's about the patriotism. It's about the willingness to serve. It's about the willingness, one, to be out there supporting our troops at all times, because it's an important aspect of what we do. I really appreciate how my daughter does it. I mean, she says something bad on TV and she's calling me right away, "Dad, did you see just what happened?" Like, don't tell me. It's important to her that she just highlights how much of a patriot she truly is. Same thing with my son. He's one of my biggest supporters. I think that there's times when it's been hard, like working long hours, doing things, you know, at work that you just can't get away from. And of course, it's frustrating to families at times when you're like, man, you missed this, you missed that. And one person that's been in my corner, a sounding board to everybody, it's my son. My son has been a phenomenal sounding board to make sure everyone understands, like, hey, I've been with Dad, been to work with Dad plenty of times. I see, you know, what he does day in and day out. I see whatever. So he can kind of relate like what happens here to everybody. And so he's a big supporter as well. And as well as my wife too, we've been married for over 30 years now. Not easy for anybody coming in, you know, it's not easy, but it takes a service member. It takes one person. It takes the spouse to kind of work it out together. We talk about balance, and balance is something that I think that is something that you can strive for, to have work and home life balance. I've learned though over time that there needs to be a inner balance between, like, say myself or a service member. If you don't have that inner balance, then you can never truly find balance, in my opinion. And I've had help along the way, which has been helpful to me. So,
well, as a command master chief, you're, you know, now in the unique position of having that overview of the NSW family situation here for this command, NSW Center. You have a special relationship with the ombudsman to the families, so you understand the family picture even better than most do. How is NSW setting up its family support apparatus? How does that work?
I feel like NSW in particular has one of the strongest preservation of the family and force programs, I think, out of anybody. And I really believe we have key people positioned to actually help facilitate helping family members all around, in conjunction with ombudsman. And for those that, you know, may not know, ombudsman is a volunteer, normally a spouse of a service member at the assigned command or assigned unit, that'll actually volunteer to help be the liaison between other spouses, right? It's a very important position. And as a command master chief, I've had to work closely with mine. When I was at SPT 12, I probably had the closest relationship I ever had with my ombudsman, and it was phenomenal, because I just knew that where I lacked in understanding how to support a spouse, that I can turn to my ombudsman, who can in turn turn to all the resources that we have in the life of the Warrior Family Support Network. Is awesome.
Yeah, because I can imagine there's all kinds of problems that crop up when you're deployed and she's at home with kids or without, and the military thing is relatively new, and she doesn't know what happens when, you know, something goes on with your pay, and who does she turn to? Isolation is a choice, right? And if the ombudsman is reaching out to all of the new spouses at the command and saying, hey, just, I'm here if you need anything, here's my phone number, call me if you have any problems, things you can't figure out, that goes a long way towards giving not only some relief to the spouse, but some peace of mind to the service member as well, so they can kind of keep focused on what they're doing on deployment.
Absolutely. And I think that we do a great job as well, I believe, in actually having what we call pre-deployment seminars and dinners right before. So we actually bring everybody together with all the resources. We brief them ahead of time. Hey, your service member is going to be gone for X amount of time. We're going to introduce all the resources we have. We do that to make sure that it's fresh on everyone's mind who to turn to in the event that something bad goes wrong. At the same time, too, making yourself available as a command master chief, as a leader in the community, is highly important. I can't tell you how many times I've actually fielded calls from wives, you know, husbands, mainly mostly wives. But I think that there's, you know, what's important to some spouses at times may seem, you know, not nearly as difficult as things, you know, happen. But to be able to help them out and direct them in the right thing, I think it's important. And really the end game there, the key thing to note, is the fact that we're keeping the service members that are doing the deed out in deployment, we're making sure that they are able to do their job, because they're not worried about what's happening at home. They're able to focus on what's happening out there because they know they have support out there, you know, back home with the kids, the wife and kids, or the husband and kids.
Well, and support also means social support, right?
Absolutely.
Keeping those activities going so that people don't feel that sense of isolation, that they're part of a command community that looks out for each other and their friends, you know, their kids. Do things together, really important to the mental health of the family that you leave behind while you're on deployment.
Yeah, we have family readiness groups as well. And so separate from the ombudsman, family readiness groups are designed to really bring families together. We do have family days to where we actually will bring everybody. It's like one big company picnic, if you will, if you're in the civilian world. We have bouncers. We have all kinds of stuff. And it's equally important to have those that are at the command present come visit as it is to have spouses that have deployed service members, right? Have them come in. So we're never leaving them out. Christmas parties, you know, like I said, family days, a few other events. We're always making the point to get the word out to them so they can be involved even if their spouses are deployed, right? That's an important part of NSW culture and NSW life.
You're the first SWCC Command Master Chief for Naval Special Warfare Center. What's the best part about this job?
Definitely what I talked about before. Best part is taking care of people. I think that's where I thrive as Command Master Chief. And that's what I want to do first and foremost. And it's not just on the spouse side and, you know, taking care of families. It's actually career progression too. And I think that's important to bring our sailors up. And granted, I'm a SWCC and, you know, we have SEALs in NSW, but I think the combat service support ratings within our lifelines, and you know, that's all the above. Any Navy rating that's assigned to us, I have a vested interest in making them progress up in the ranks, right? I feel that's where I also thrive because I care about their advancement, their well-being, all the above. At the end of the day, I want them to exceed and excel where they can and just be the best them, so to speak.
You've been around long enough now and seen a lot of changes at NSW, and now even the first women to come into the NSW force, into the SWCC community. Mm-hmm. What's that been like? What are your impressions so far?
I was actually, and I think the very first podcast I did, I was actually still sitting as the SWCC training senior enlisted advisor at the time. I was actually sitting that. I had the opportunity of actually seeing the first SWCC candidate go through at the time. And she deselected herself, I think, in the first week of training. But I was very impressed to see where she was at the time. We all lack somewhere. And I'd say, hey, if you look back at, you know, the time I went to SWCC, I probably lacked in a few areas of physical fitness and a few other things, right? You know, I wasn't necessarily the fastest runner, swimmer, and all that. But I saw an individual who actually was very good in the water, and I'd say probably about 80% better than some of the other male candidates that we had in there, right? Mm-hmm. So it really made me realize, or made me reinforce my thoughts on, like, okay, if anybody, it doesn't matter who, can get through these pathways, these or pipelines as we used to call them, then we need that person. We need that person's skill. We need the person's grit. You know, resiliency, we need it all. So I think that seeing first two females graduate from the pathways, I think that is absolutely, you know, a great thing for the community. I think it provides a little more, you know, the buzzword diversity, right? And that's one thing. But I think it just reinforces that we all come from different backgrounds, shapes, you know, colors, creeds, no matter what. We're all different, but we all have one goal in common, and I think that just screams America to me. So I've been very impressed to see some of the candidates come through here and their capabilities.
Well, I know there was some talk about how we would have to change the standards to accommodate women, and all that I saw us do was go through and validate the standards to make sure that they're actually operationally relevant and not just sort of a, you know, BS thing that we throw out there for make it hard for people to do. They went through and made sure that they were all good and valid to what we actually need to do out on deployment. Because of that, they found that they were, you know, basically gender neutral standards as well. None of those required you to be a male. When we lifted the ban in 2016, I believe it was at DOD level, and we were able to accomplish that here at NSW a little bit later since we made the necessary modifications here. We started to see, they kind of trickled in at first, but we started to see the female candidates come in on both sides, SEAL and SWCC. And our first two graduates are SWCC, and now they're out in the teams, and they're at their training and doing their thing. And I think the community looks like it seems to have adjusted pretty well. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, going back to your comments about the looking at the standards and making sure that they're relevant, I was actually part of that, you know, at that time. I was the senior enlisted advisor at the SWCC Training Center, as I noted. And so, yeah, I saw the process, and I think that we went through and verified and validated that the standards were general neutral, period. And I think that was that happened, and there was no waiving of standards at all. Standards, essentially, in some areas, they said, hey, maybe you should consider this, consider that. For efficiencies, that's about it, but nothing changed at all. So I think that I go back to this. If anybody can meet the standard, then they should probably be here, provided they have the right character, the right competence, the whole nine yards.
So let me go back to what I think is the most important question, and your answer, I think, will be satisfying to people who want to know more about SWCC. I want to talk about your personal experience in the teams. You've gone on deployments, you've been everywhere, different kinds of boats, different places. What has been your favorite moment, your profound moment in the teams? Describe that to us.
I've had a lot of favorite moments. It's going to be hard to nail just one down, but I will say this. I feel, and I think it's safe to say it's probably true, is that SWCCs are entrusted with a little more authority and accountability of what they do. SWCC leaders are actually tasked ultimately as chief petty officers to be assigned as what we call DET LCPO, used to be detachment commander, DET OIC. That's a lot of authority and responsibility put on our chiefs, unlike any other service, any other command in the Navy. What that means is that our guys go out and they actually are responsible for the admin, logistics, and operations of a detachment at the chief petty officer level. And I think for me, being able to lead folks overseas alone and unafraid as a chief petty officer, SWCC, is probably one of the best things I did. And I'd say, going back to my Mark V detachment commander, aka detachment LCPO tour, leading chief petty officer, was probably one of the best, because I traditionally saw Mark V detachments, and I saw a lot of, I'd say, pockets of personalities and pieces, and I always wanted my guys to be one cohesive unit. So we had 14 SWCCs in one detachment and about 7 combat service support ratings in there, to include a couple CBs, some engineers, all that. And I think the highlight of that for me was just finishing the deployment after a 2-year cycle and just having one last get together and just all being able to get along, have fun and all that. But when I reflected back on the whole time, it was just awesome to lead people in a capacity as a SWCC senior in chief at that time. You know, I don't know if that answers the question fully, but I'll say that being able to lead in NSW as a SWCC has been awesome for me.
Yeah, at the enlisted level.
Yes.
That's amazing. So talking about the mission of the center, which is training assessment, what do you think of this new crop of candidates that we've got coming through these days?
Well, for one, I definitely want to put my faith in that we have a bunch of young Americans that are willing to step up and join our armed forces all around. And I don't care if it's Navy, Marine Corps, Army, Air Force. I'm really passionate that we do have young Americans still willing to serve. For me, this mission is important as well, because I believe we are producing the next greatest generation in this country. I say that the greatest generation, generally known as those that fought in World War II, there was a good amount of Americans that stepped up from all different backgrounds, stepped up to actually take the fight to Germany and to Japan back then. I believe we're facing some things right now in our country that could be bigger, could be huge, and I think that we need to remember that we still need people to serve. I believe the people that volunteer to come here to this training pathways, I believe that they are part of what's going to be the next greatest generation, in my opinion. I think we need a good amount of young Americans to actually join the military and armed services right now, because they will be a part of something big.
And they should be SWCC.
I agree. Now, don't get me wrong. SWCC's definitely, you know, where my heart's at, right? I have a little bit of fleet time in me, too, so I understand the importance of the Navy. I think that I love it, but I definitely value what I've done as a SWCC, and I would have never done the things I have done or been to the places I've been if I was not a SWCC, so I'm very proud of that.
Well, I appreciate you joining us here today. Folks, that was Command Master Chief Joaquin Martinez. the Command Master Chief of Naval Special Warfare Center. I'm Scott Williams, and this was The Only Easy Day Was Yesterday, the official Navy SEAL podcast.
There is nowhere to hide in Hell Week, gents. If you've been skating through Buzz so far, you will not do so any longer.
Exactly right. That's what we're looking for.
Get your mud down.
Get off your knees.